Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Many members of the national LGBTQ community live in states where, though they have the right to marry, they have no state-level non-discrimination protections in other areas of life.
It claims to strive for equality, but in practice, this bill undermines the constitutional religious freedoms guaranteed to all Americans.
On this vote, the yeas are 224 and the nays are 206. The bill is passed.
Those are voices for and against as the U.S. House of Representatives passed the Equality Act on Thursday. If big tech is already silencing voices that question the LGBTQ agenda, what will big government do if the Equality Act becomes law? Joining us to talk about three issues, the House passage of the Equality Act, Amazon's ban of the book When Harry Became Sally, and President Biden's nominee for Health and Human Services Secretary, Dr. Ryan Anderson. He's president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, and author of several books, including When Harry Became Sally, and a column for First Things titled When Amazon Erased My Book. Dr. Anderson, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
I can't say that I'm personally surprised that Amazon banned When Harry Became Sally. If I recall correctly, we were one of the first to interview you about this book, and Twitter initially rejected our request to promote the interview, calling it hateful content. But has Amazon provided you with any explanation for removing your book from their site?
Not really. All they have done is said that the book violates their content policy. 3 years after they began selling the book, right? So it's 3 years later that they're only now discovering that it violates the content policy. They won't tell us which aspect of the content policy it violates, nor will they tell us what aspect of the book creates the violation. So I have no idea which part of the book is objectionable to Amazon, and I have no idea which aspect of their policy has created the objection. All they will do whenever we ask for an explanation is they say it violates our content policy.
Do you think the timing of Amazon's action is important?
Well, it's suspicious because this week the House of Representatives voted on the Equality Act. I'm probably one of the most outspoken critics of the Equality Act, and they pulled the book from their shelves the very same day that I published an op-ed in the New York Post criticizing the Equality Act. So you tell me.
Why are some calling President Biden's Equality Act a legislative sleight of hand?
Sure, because, you know, who could be against equality, right? So it's named the Equality Act. That's a nice PR slogan. But what it does is it undermines the real equality of women and girls, and it creates new rights for boys and men who identify as women and girls. So it says that if you're a man who identifies as a woman, you now would have a civil right to enter the women's locker room, to sleep in the women's shelter, to compete on the women's sports team, right? And so this turns actual equality upside down. What actual equality required was that we had equal opportunities for women and girls, which meant private spaces, a private bathroom at a workplace, a private locker room at a school, separate athletic competitions. I mean, there's a reason why there's an NBA and a WNBA, because equality sometimes requires not sameness, but a recognition of our differences. This turns all of that upside down.
What are your concerns bringing these two subjects together about big tech if the Equality Act is signed into law?
Well, so put it this way, if you are afraid of what big tech can do to people who dissent from transgender ideology, just wait to see what big government can do. If they make gender identity a protected class in law, including fluid gender identities, non-binary gender identities, just wait to see what that means when the government gets to censor you, when the government gets to coerce you, and the government gets to punish you. Both of these things are threats, right? Both big tech and big government are threats to our liberty, are threats to our dignity, are threats to our flourishing. But what this means is that we need to have laws that reflect the truth, right? This was MLK's point in his letter from the Birmingham jail, that human law needs to reflect the natural law, that man-made law needs to reflect God's law. And we can know God's law both through faith and through reason.
Many who haven't read your book assume that it's simply a rant against transgenderism. How do you respond to that?
Well, I would encourage them to actually read it. I could have written a rant against transgenderism. It probably would have sold better if it was a rant on these issues. But I set out to, you know, intentionally write a book that was going to be as civil and respectful and rigorous and well-researched as possible, right? The type of book I wanted to write was the type of book that you could give to a friend who doesn't agree with you on this issue and they would be persuaded, right? So it uses arguments, reasons, evidence. I think there are like 30 or 40 pages of endnotes for all the citations at the end of the book. It doesn't engage in name calling or heated rhetoric. And this is the scary thing. If even this book is objectionable to Amazon, which book that tells the truth about our embodiment as male and female can survive?
So what is the thesis of When Harry Became Sally?
Sure. So, I mean, the first thing to say is the title of the book is a reference and a play off of the movie When Harry Met Sally. And the premise of that movie was the question, you know, are men and women so different that they can't even be friends? And now a generation later, you know, we're wrestling with the question, can a man become a woman? Can a man be trapped in a woman's body? And it just shows the cultural trajectory we're on. And the underlying argument in the book is, no, you can't be trapped in the wrong body because we aren't trapped in bodies, right? That already embraces a false metaphysic of body self-dualism, where the real self is something other than the body. So it advances a philosophical argument about the nature of human nature, then looks at the science of what makes us male or female based upon how an organism is organized for sexual reproduction, and then looks at the medicine of what is the best, most loving, compassionate thing we can do for someone who experiences a gender identity conflict. How can we help them to feel comfortable in their own body? And then it looks at what the law should say about all this, right? The chapter on the Equality Act, on the Supreme Court, on various legal issues. So it's really meant to be a comprehensive treatment of these issues, looking at the philosophy, the science, the medicine, the law. And the hardest chapter to research and write was a chapter about personal stories, testimonies that I was able to find of people on YouTube and on blogs sharing their stories about having transitioned and then regretting it and then detransitioning. And watching those YouTubes, I mean, it's heartbreaking. And it's why all of our listeners should be concerned about what Amazon's doing, because my goal here is to prevent anyone from going through the process of a high school girl having a mastectomy and removing her breasts, going on testosterone and having her voice change and having her beard develop, and then 5 or 10 years later regretting it, not being able to get her voice back, never being able to bear a child, let alone nurse a child. These are heartbreaking outcomes, and we should all be doing whatever we can to prevent them from happening.
One of the swiftest responses on social media to the Amazon removal of your book from its site was, look, Amazon is a private company. Private companies can do what they want. You say that both liberalism and libertarianism are inadequate to address the question of what private businesses can and can't do. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So for liberalism, use this as like left-leaning, progressive liberalism, they just totally run roughshod over property rights and over, you know, the actual rights and liberties that we should have. And everything is kind of like big government to the extreme. But then the flip side of that is libertarianism, in which liberty is like not only the highest good, but it's like it's the only good. And so all of our liberties should be maximized. And conservatism and the natural law tradition says both of those are mistakes, that our liberties are important and they should be protected, but all of our liberties have limits. and that includes our economic liberties. And so you can abuse your economic liberties. You can be systematically using your economic liberties in ways that undermine human dignity, that undermine human flourishing. This happened with racist big business owners, and that's why we had to pass the Equality Act of 1964 to say that businesses couldn't discriminate on the basis of race. Imagine if Amazon said, you know, we don't sell books to black customers, or we don't sell books written by black authors, right? No one would say, oh, it's a private company, it can do whatever it wants. We're seeing something different here. It's not racism, and it's not nearly as bad as racism, but we are seeing a form of almost ideological discrimination, and we're seeing it from a market actor who has the majority share of the market in books. And so when you see that combination of skewing based on ideology and being able to impact the market, that calls for attention. No one would care. I certainly wouldn't care if, you know, one brick and mortar bookstore in a progressive neighborhood of DC wouldn't sell my book. But if the bookstore that controls more than half of all book sales in America does that, it's going to have impact, because it's going to have a chilling effect on any future author who might write on this issue. It's going to have a chilling effect on any publisher who might be considering whether or not to publish a book on this issue. And then ultimately, it's going to have a chilling effect on readers who won't have access to this. You've heard about me and my book, but how many books will you never even hear of because Amazon dropped them and no one knew? And therefore, it's going to have a chilling effect on our entire discourse, because we need to be able to debate and discuss these issues. And if big tech is censoring that, how do we even have the exchange of ideas that we need?
Explain the natural law approach to this issue.
Sure. So the natural law approach says that the reason that we have private property is precisely to fulfill our needs, to fulfill our nature, to perfect our nature. I mean, what makes natural law kind of both natural and law is it says human beings have a certain nature, and we should act in ways that fulfills and perfects our nature. And so, you know, friendship is a way that we perfect our social nature. Marriage is a way that we perfect our conjugal nature. Knowledge is a way that we perfect our intellectual nature. And then private property is useful as a means for all of those things, right? We need a certain amount of property to have a home in which we can raise a family. We need a certain amount of property in order to have, you know, a computer in which to do research to write a book, a certain amount of property if you're a farmer to raise livestock, right? And so you can see how private property is at the service of fulfilling our nature. But that also means that if you're misusing your property, right, there are going to be limits to this. We don't have property in other people. We don't sell people. We don't sell sex. We don't allow people to exercise their property in ways that would actually undermine human dignity. And that's how the natural law approaches it. It thinks through, you know, what is the important liberty, but then also what is the limit on that liberty.
What kind of regulation is needed, generally speaking, on big tech?
So that I don't yet know what the right answer is, simply because I haven't been thinking about that as much, because, you know, I've been focusing a lot about marriage, about the gender identity issues, about religious liberty stuff. I wrote my dissertation on economic issues, and, you know, I finished that back in 2014, and I never had the time to turn it into a book because of all these other pressing issues. But my basic thought there is that we have several different models. We have anti-discrimination laws that place limits on business. We have antitrust and anti-monopoly laws that place limits on business. We have common carriers and public utilities laws that place limits on businesses. And then we also have something known as limited public forum law, which is a First Amendment protection that actually applies to government property. Limited public forums could be like when schools rent out their classrooms on the weekend. None of them are perfect analogies to our current situation with big tech, but I think all of them can help us think about this, because I think big tech is like right at the intersection of all four of those areas. And so what we need to do, what policymakers need to do, what, you know, public intellectuals need to do, which, you know, think tank fellows need to do, is think about how do we take those four different models and construct a fifth model that would be the appropriate way for regulating the power that big tech has over our lives. What we can't do is simply say, oh, it's a private business and private businesses can do whatever they want. That's going to be a non-starter.
We're talking with Dr. Ryan Anderson about Amazon's banning of the book When Harry Became Sally. He is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, and author of several books, including When Harry Became Sally, and a column for First Things titled When Amazon Erased My Book. After the break, we'll get Dr. Anderson's answer to the question, what does it tell us about the advocates of transgenderism when they seek to silence reasonable objections to their ideology and agenda?
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th, at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit sidadvocatesforlife.com. sidadvocatesforlife.com.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. simplyclassical.com.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
The one thing we have to recognize that is true of New Testament biblical Christianity is that it embraces hope and never embraces despair.
I think thinking about the church not so much as an army engaged in war, as a community engaged in protest.
Apologetics is demonstrating that the proclamation of law and gospel itself is embedded in history.
The reason why we say that the Lord's Supper forgives sins, that baptism forgives sins, that absolution forgives sins, is because Jesus promised that those things forgive sins.
Get ready for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in 15 minutes. Those four soundbites in their entirety, your vote decides which will be soundbite of the week. In the meantime, we're talking about Amazon's ban of the book When Harry Became Sally, the U.S. House passage of the Equality Act, and President Biden's nominee for Health and Human Services Secretary. Dr. Ryan Anderson is our guest. Ryan, what does it tell you about the advocates for transgenderism when they seek to silence reasonable objections to their ideology and to their agenda?
I mean, I think to a certain extent, this is a sign that they know they can't win the argument on the merits, so they want to shut down the debate. You know, there's the famous saying for lawyers that, you know, if you can argue on the facts, argue the facts. If you can argue on the law, argue the law. And if you can't do either, bang the table. And it seems like that's what's happening here. They can't argue based on the philosophy, based on the science, based on the medicine. And so they're just shutting down the debate, which ultimately is a sign of insecurity. Right? So one reason that I think in the long run, our side prevails on this is that we are on the side of truth. And what we have to do, what our vocation is, what we're doing on this radio show, what I'm doing in my books is we're bearing witness to the truth, right? It's a universal Christian vocation to bear witness to the truth.
Someone says, Ryan, Amazon's memory hole in your book has given you priceless publicity. I noticed this morning your number two bestseller on Barnes & Noble. You're going to sell more books. What's your response?
Oh, undoubtedly. In my case, in the short run, I'm having a great week for book sales. But in the long run, and for all of the other authors that you've never heard of, what is the impact of this? I mean, so we need to think about this not just as like, you know, oh, woe is Ryan Anderson, right? That's not the argument here. The argument here is, what does this mean for anyone currently? Let's say you're writing a book with several chapters, and one of those chapters was going to be about transgender issues. Do you now think twice? Do you censor yourself? Does your publisher say, hey, why don't we take that chapter of the book out because we're afraid Amazon might ban the book? Right? I mean, that's the concern. And then what other books has Amazon removed that you and I haven't heard about because the author isn't prominent enough to get the attention of the media? I'm fortunate that because I've spent 9 years at the Heritage Foundation and now I'm the president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, when this happens to me, you heard about it and you're able to amplify my voice on your show. What about all those other authors, right? That's why this is so troubling.
So in a nutshell, why does the private businesses can do what they want argument fail when trying to apply it to big tech?
Yeah, I mean, because I think to a certain extent, it's, you know, how much of a market share do you have? If there was like one bookstore that was a Christian bookstore, and so it didn't want to sell certain books, and there's another bookstore down the street that is like the progressive bookstore, so they don't want to sell other books, but neither of them controls the vast majority of book sales, then you can leave things to the markets, right? This would be an appropriate way where you can have economic liberties and they serve the common good by having a variety of bookstores. But when Amazon has used its market dominance to put out of business many of those mom and pop brick and mortar stores, and now it controls the majority of book sales in the country, and then it starts, you know, removing unobjectionable titles, that's when you start thinking this actually is detrimental to the common good because of all the chilling effects that we discussed for authors, for publishers, and then ultimately for readers.
Ryan, President Biden has nominated Javier Becerra to be Secretary of Health and Human Services. Who is he, and why do you say that he is dangerously unqualified for that position?
Sure. I mean, look, not every secretary of HHS needs to be a medical doctor, but it would seem that you would want someone with actual medical expertise when you're in the middle of a pandemic. Becerra has no medical expertise, and all that he's known for with respect to medicine is suing Roman Catholic nuns and harassing pro-lifers, including David DeLayden. So Becerra was the Attorney General of California who went after the Little Sisters of the Poor, who went after David DeLayden, who was fined $200 million in Medicaid funding because he was forcing a different order of Catholic nuns to pay for abortion. The man is an abortion extremist. He doesn't care about our actual civil liberties like religious liberty. And it was the Department of Health and Human Services who fined him, and by extension, the state of California, the $200 million that I just mentioned. So it's a huge conflict of interest to now put that individual in charge of the very agency that had just found him in violation of federal law.
What would likely happen under Becerra's leadership at the HHS?
Too soon to tell, but I think what we're going to see is that if he is confirmed, you can expect that the Little Sisters of the Poor will be back in court. You can expect that other hospitals that don't want to perform sex reassignment procedures will be in court. You can expect the contraception mandate to be back in court. I think you will see that anyone who practices medicine that is pro-life, that is pro-bodily integrity, is going to find that Becerra is not their ally.
Finally, how do you respond to his contention made during his hearing several times that he never sued Little Sisters of the Poor, he never sued nuns, he only sued the government?
Well, so, I mean, that's just inaccurate. And the reason why is that even if he was just suing the government, the reason he was suing the government was precisely to prevent the government, under the federal government, from protecting the Little Sisters of the Poor. But the second thing to say is that the case name, California v. Little Sisters of the Poor. Okay, so that's the Ninth Circuit case, right? So The idea that he wasn't suing, he was the AG of California. His name is on the brief, California v. Little Sisters of the Poor. And what it was doing was preventing the federal government from exempting the Little Sisters from the Obamacare contraception mandate. So I just don't see how he can even remotely try to justify that. Apart from, what is he doing here? He's trying to kind of like split hairs to make it seem like he wasn't actually persecuting the nuns. And there was a really good exchange that Senator Ben Sasse had with Becerra, asking him, well, why were you suing? What was the goal here? And he couldn't answer it because what everyone knew was that he was going after the nuns.
Do you find it ironic that President Biden, who has accused many of not trusting the science during his election campaign, has nominated a man with no scientific experience to head Health and Human Services?
I don't find it ironic at all, because unfortunately, I think what's going on here is that Biden has given in to the most radical, ideologically charged portions of his base. And you saw this with his day one executive order. You've seen it with other nominations. And unfortunately, I just think that's where this is headed. He promised that he was going to unify us during his inauguration address, but it looks like he's going to be pretty radical in his actual policies and personnel.
Dr. Ryan Anderson is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's the John Paul II Teaching Fellow in Social Thought at the University of Dallas, founder and editor of The Public Discourse, and author of several books, including When Harry Became Sally, and a column for First Things titled When Amazon Erased My Book. You can read it, purchase When Harry Became Sally, and find out more about the Ethics and Public Policy Center at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Ryan, thanks.
Thank you.
Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week is next. We're going to play our four soundbites for you, and then it'll be your opportunity to win the LPR bundle package when you vote for Soundbite of the Week. 1-877-623-MYIE.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, three shows to wrap up St. Matthew: Resurrection, The Real Fraud, and Great Commission. Then on to Hosea with Introduction and the Children with Their Names. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Have you ever wished you could see Ad Crucem's products before buying them? Well, now you can. Ad Crucem has opened our brand new workshop in Littleton, Colorado. Come visit us and watch how we make our Christmas ornaments. Check out the quality and fabric of our church banners, or choose some greeting cards, posters, icons, or jewelry. Of course, if you can't make it to Colorado, we are still open online. For details or directions, visit adcrucem.com. That's ADC. RUCEM.com.